This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Ben Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
One of my guests tonight started a band back in 1985 when he was at the VCA. The band has released six recordings, including a cassette along the way, and that band is having a reunion concert. Steve Settergreen is one of Melbourne's amazing pianists and band leader, and it is my pleasure to bid a very warm welcome back to the Bent Notes studio. Steve Settergreen, welcome, Steve.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much.
But you've brought someone with you.
Of course, I brought my brother Mel, and we're looking forward to playing together very, very, very shortly. That's what we're here today.
Very far away at all. Mel, welcome to the Bent Note studio.
It's great to be here as well.
Great to have you. You're both here in studio. We've had Steve a couple of times now.
Yeah, I've been here a few times and loved it. It's been really good fun. But I thought Mel would enjoy it with me, you know.
The last visit you had to the studio, Steve, was last year for the Stonington Jazz Festival, where you reinterpreted the Duke's Far East Suite. And this time we're talking about your own music with a repertoire from over 30 years. Now, why did you start the band back in 1985, and what were your expectations for its longevity?
It's a good story. I was obviously at VCA, and my drive is always to be playing and performing and playing in front of people. And the story is a good story because there was a venue called Jazz After Dark at the Arts Centre. And I went there and said, it should be a gig for us. And they said, what's the name of your band? And there was an article written all about me, but it was actually Malcolm and in the Age. And I said, what's the name of the group? I said, the name of the group's a mistaken identity. And so it's been with that name ever since. And look, we've recorded a lot together. Mel's predominantly it writes most of the tunes these days. Mel's an unbelievable musician and composer, and we've been playing for so long, and we don't know what's going to happen next. That's what we're on about,
well,
really.
That's the way to do it, isn't it? To have something that you don't know what's going to happen next, so you're on the edge. It's like live radio and live television.
That's correct. You know, you've got to be in the moment, and I think the more we're in the moment, the more it happens.
Now, I was just about to ask you, Steve, whether you started the band as performance or rehearsal, but it sounds very much as if you started Mistaken Identity to be a performing band.
I did do that. I didn't know it would last this long. But when you're really young, you don't know what's ahead of you. You know, I stood by the sword of playing, you know, original music and playing great tunes and playing with great players. We've had so many great musicians. Mel wasn't originally the first member. It was a lady called Felicity Proven that was a very unbelievable trumpet player who was a year above me at college. And we started a rhythm section, and next thing, recording for PBS in a live venue. So it's all my life I've been always trying to play the music that I love playing, and this is what I'm going to try and do in a couple of weeks at the Kew Courthouse.
Mel, when did you join into Mistaken Identity, having been the original Identity Mistaken?
In 88. So the original band, as Steve said, was called Loose Arrangements, actually, and it was from the College of the Arts, and they had Darren Ferrugia and Jerry Civarelli and Felicity Proven, and Jerry went on to tour with Kylie Minogue, and at that stage Steve was looking for a saxophonist and I was playing with Blues on the Boil, so I decided to swap ships and work with Steve. And so after that we did our first album. The second album, the first album I did was Bits and Pieces, and that, I think that's the cassette you were talking about as well.
And there's been a number of recordings there. What's driven the recording process? Has it been just to keep a record of what you've been doing, or has it intentionally been to get the recordings out there into the marketplace?
Look, I really think you should photograph. It's like a photograph of where you are at that time, and it's got to be honest. That's the truth. You can't manufacture something. It just doesn't work. It won't be long-lasting. So we've been with Newmarket Music all along, or Dex as it was then, and I'm still with Dex these days, and we've recorded a lot of albums and a lot of tunes, and we're due for another one at this stage.
You must be due fairly soon. When was the last one released?
I reckon 4 years. Every 4 years I get the itch. Yeah, it's a four-year itch for me, so we're due for one.
The last album, Mistaken Identity, was a tribute to Stevie Wonder. And then, of course, Steve photographed, as he said, his points in time. So that's been where we've been at. So, yes, it's been a long time between drinks, but, you know, it's not worth releasing something unless it's a moment in time and it encapsulates what the feeling was. So all the albums that we've done along have encapsulated where we were. The one in 88 was very, very much encapsulated the 80s, and then in the 90s, what was the next album after Bits and Pieces, Steve?
The one with the photo in Merry Creek, was that one called?
Just Perfect, which was nominated for an APRA award, of course. And then we did Identify, which was an all-original album with some great vocal tracks on it. And then the one after that was Wondering. So, yeah, it captures the spirit of the time of what we are. I think that's what we're trying to do. So, again, when we that album was all Stevie Wonder's music reinterpreted in the style Mistake No Identity works in, and so we don't know what the next album will be. So
you forgot about Live though, bro. The double CD, which was a way of showing
the 10-year growth of the band. So it was recorded live. A great thing that Steve did was we had a great band in the late 90s with a couple of young musicians, Toby Mack, and then years later we were recording with the original Ted Vining trio. So it was great to see Ted Vining and Barry Buckley. Really good to see the way that those tunes had evolved.
What do you need before you can actually reinterpret someone's music?
We saw pre before all the internet and stuff like that. So we would get inspired by something, but then you got to make it your own. That's really what's about. And I think that's very Aussie, by the way, is run copying something, is being inspired by something, make it your own. And then Mel's very good at arranging and putting things together. He'll come up to me, hey, bro, check this tune out, right? And then all of a sudden that leads to something. Or, hey, I've written this whole album. Mel would manufacture the whole Stevie Wonder album. And I remember one of the songs he said to me, this will suit you really well. And he's got a really good ear for what suits you, like someone dressing you, you know, like this outfit would look really good. Mel's really good with music, and because he's grown up with record stores and he's a vinyl junkie.
Are you really, Mel?
Just knows what's right. He's really, really cool like that. And we have this friction that we put on stage that we love very much, but we know what we want. You know, we're very, very driven by creating for the people. It's not about us so much, it's about connecting. And now we've been both involved with education, lots of schools and stuff like that, so we see each other, but we don't play enough together. So this is what this gig's about, getting back together and really playing a great gig together.
Steve, is your view of why the band exists now the same as what it was back in 85?
No, look, bands have changed now. Like the whole thing's evolved. It's not bad, it's evolved into something different. Everyone sort of comes in and plays their part and does a thing. A band's someone you hang together, you tour together, you go on the road together, you hang out, you fight, you love, you all that sort of stuff. See, we haven't got time like that now to do that. So you got to make it, like as Mel saying, moment time. So when we get the Q Courthouse in a couple of weeks, we're going to try and relive with two other beautiful musicians what we were on about. But we're still the vibe of Mistake and Do, which is about being yourself. That's about playing hard, really good, accessible jazz that people love, that you can really, really have a good time with.
My guests on Bent Notes tonight are pianist, educator, composer and band leader of Mistaken Identity, Steve Settergreen, and his saxophonist brother, Mel. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9, where my guests are pianist, educator, composer and band leader of Mistaken Identity, Steve Settergreen, and his brother, saxophonist Mel Settergreen. It's great to have you here in studio, gentlemen, talking about your Mistaken Identity band, which is performing in, I think it's 2 weeks' time, isn't it?
Yeah, on the 29th of this month.
And you're performing as Mistaken Identity.
Correct, yeah.
Why do you think it's important, Steve, to get the band back together again, to pinch someone else's words?
Well, I just thought, look, it's been a while, and if you give something a rest sometimes, it might grow. And look, we haven't played for a long time, and we don't plan to play much after this gig. We're just going to do a one-off concert. But, you know, there is a special kinesiology between Mel and I and the band members, and it's really, really special. And it's a different sort of band from other bands. It's really, really engaging and really, really fun. We're just looking forward to playing and sharing in such a beautiful atmosphere at the Kew Courthouse on the 29th of June.
So is it just like riding a bike, that it's not one of those things you forget, you just get the band back together and all of a sudden it just clicks?
Most of the time. I think it just gives an opportunity to play this material, which we haven't sort of played for a long time, and really see and if it stands still the test of time. I mean, it's been 30 years, so that's a lot of material over 30 years. So.
How are you going to fit 30 years of material into one short gig?
Oh, well, that's the first 30 seconds.
That's us arguing already, right? Which one should we do here? But normally, I think, and we've talked about this before, it just comes to you, like, in the moment, and so Mel and I will just look at each other and go, right, we're going to go here, even though we'll do a lot of planning, right? Yep. But something will feel right, and we're brave enough to go, let's go with this, and the audience are part of that experience. So that's really what I like. I like that really risk-taking thing about playing jazz music. I really like having a good time. And then it's about a sense of freedom. So if Mel wants to go for a long solo, or if it's Kim on bass, or myself, or Scott on drums, away we go. And it'll just feel really organic and really, 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 really happy and good vibes, you know?
Let's go through, as you mentioned, a couple of names. Who have you got playing on the gig on the 29th of June?
Well, we've got obviously Mel and I, and we've got Kim May on the bass. Hopefully he'll bring his electric as well as acoustic.
Yes.
And we've got Scott Lambie, an old friend of mine, and Mel's. And they're all about Mel's age, I think, on drums. So it's a quartet. So it's like, mistakenly there have been lots of forms, but the quartet form is our best form, I think, anyhow. Because I think I like playing behind people and...
Supporting
yeah. and leading from
that's
by.
That's a skill in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that is a skill. But I love trio playing, but I really like communicating between all the musicians. That's what I really like doing. And being... That's really my sensitivity of what I like doing, is like, if it's a vocalist or what it is in this stage, it'll be Malcolm, who I know very well, and he knows me very well, and it's really good fun. We're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think the biggest point to make is the preparation thing. I think that's the biggest change in education, and what we do is, the fact is, we were working regularly. We played at a little venue called Bennett's Lane every Wednesday and Friday night for 5 years, I think it was, wasn't it, bro? Yeah. So if you're doing that regularly, it allows you to grow in a different way. So these days the biggest change would be the preparation, but still playing within the moment with those two great musicians and trying to encapsulate what Mistaken Identity is about, which is really the greatest thing. Was when people used to leave our gig and they go, that jazz, we love it. We don't tell them what it is. We just hope that they enjoy jazz in that form. Yeah,
we're not selling ourselves short. We're still playing hard. We're still playing with a lot of guts and stuff like that. But there's an energy. The music needs energy. I when I was asked about, what do you think about improvisation, I go, first, you need energy, you need a bit of oomph, you know, you need something. Not over the top, it can have, because both Mel and I are very dynamic musicians, we'll get lights and there'll be ballads and there'll be stuff like that. But it's got to connect, it's got to communicate. It's not about just look at us, look how good I am, and look at me play this run and this run and all this. It's about... the people have a big say in it. So we're pretty lucky. We always seem to play in front of good audiences.
Good. Yeah. Is that because what you're playing hits the mark with them? It engages the audience, and then you've got them for the show.
Yeah. Well, I think we bring them in. I think that's the key. We respect that they're the audience, and there's not that crossover where the audience slightly go in a different direction. But every gig we tend to do, whatever the gig it is, the audience know that they feel part of what's actually happening, because it is actually in the moment. So yeah, even though that preparation goes down, and I think they can see the communication going and feel that they're part of something that's happening. You know, we never tell our audience to shush up or do any of those things, because it's really, without the audience being part of that connection, you don't have the music. And if you go through the history of any music, but especially of this music, the audience really maintained what was happening as part of how society was building. So,
and of course the music engages the audience, and the audience engages with you, because particularly in the likes of Bennett's Lane, the old Bennett's Lane particularly, because it was a smaller venue, and the Kew Courthouse is a lovely, I think I'd use the word intimate venue.
Yeah, I've been there once many years ago when I played with Lake Gillaskie. I can remember playing there. But I think they've got a nice grand piano for me, which makes my job a little bit easier. Really nice. It's nice to play in that sort of environment. It'd be a nice environment for us to play in.
I think any venue can be intimate. It just depends how you do it. So, as we know, my friend here is heading off to Hamer Hall in a second.
And, he is indeed.
And I was recently at Generations in Jazz, where I watched Liz Wright, I think was the vocal who's out here for Melbourne International Jazz Festival, and she was singing. She decided to do Amazing Grace, and there was some 6,000 students there, and they got their phones out. And
oh, did they really?
And then all of a sudden, they stopped that, and you could hear a pin drop. There were two fabulous moments, and I guess if you have that connection on any level, it doesn't matter whether it's great to play intimate, because then you really can get that connection. But, you know, as Branford Marsalis once said, he was on tour, Sting and I doing one of those fabulous, huge gigs, and he said he found it very hard to try and connect with the 250,000 people. So there's a balance, but I think it's really important that the going back to what we were talking about, that the audience have that connection as well. So there's a connection between the band and there's a connection with the audience, and it all intertwines, and hopefully everyone has a great time, and hopefully we play some great music. And again, thanks for having us, because it's really great to talk about these things, because I think it gives the audience a chance to understand what's behind happening.
It's important to know that. It does help as an audience to know what's going on up there on stage. And I love watching musos and being close enough to musos to see the eyes move between musos. And just a slight movement of the head, someone else in the band sees it, you see it, and you can, all of a sudden you hear a change. Yeah. And that's what I look forward to when I'm seeing a small gig.
Eye contact or body contact is really, really important. And you've got to trust. It's all about trust. You've got to really, really trust and love each other like there's no tomorrow. You know, that's how I play with any musician, right? But if you don't have that energy on the stage, you can't make it work as well. So that's really what we're on about. Mistaken Identity love playing and creating things. And Mel's right. There's been so many gigs we've played where they haven't been jazz experts or anything, but if that's jazz, we're coming again. And so we would build up a bit of following. We weren't trying to be popular. We're just trying to connect and make them part of our world. That's really what it's about.
Well, that sounds like a great way to do it. You're going to make people part of your world on Saturday night, June the 29th, 8 o'clock at the Kew Courthouse. And I reckon the best way to find details is actually go onto the browser, search for Mistaken Identity, Kew Courthouse, and then click on the Boorundara link. Steve and Mel Settergreen, thank you both very much for dropping in tonight. I wish you all the best as you go off to see Herbie tonight. Enjoy immensely, and look forward to Saturday, June the 29th. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for having us. Keep jazz going.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.